This is Jordan Seculo. Has the Ayatollah suppressed the working class revolution in Iran?
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The protests across cities in Iran reflect the failed leadership of a corrupt regime. The Ayatollah's negligence in denying the basic rights of his own people is inexcusable. Instead of allocating resources to care for families in need, the regime has chosen to use what economic gains it has accrued through the Iran deal to fund terrorism and sectarian violence in Syria, Yemen, Lebanon, and elsewhere in the region. I stand with the Iranian people in their demand for prosperity and freedom, and I call upon my colleagues in Congress to do the same thing.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Free and open election, I think, is what the people want. It's an educated population. It's young, 70% of the population under 30. That's one of the major sources of discontent.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Folks, I want to make this clear from the American Center for Law and Justice. As much as we oppose the Iranian regime, let me tell you, a dream of mine would be, and something to pray for, is that we could have an Iran in a decade or so from now, that you and I as Americans, as freedom-loving people, could travel to just as easily as we travel to places like Israel or Egypt or Turkey or anywhere else in that region of the world where we're welcomed because of that young population that was mentioned just in the beginning of the broadcast, who has risen up before and was ignored by the Obama administration. That was the 2009 Green Revolution. And we have a lot of experience, obviously, dealing with this regime and where this regime is imprisoning some of its top protest leaders. And the question now is, have they completely suppressed the protest, or will the arrest? And now we have one of the student leaders has been killed. They say they committed suicide. That is totally unbelievable in Evin prison, because you would not even have the ability to do that to yourself. They would torture you, but not let you take your own life until they decide they wanted to kill you in Evin prison. That's where, again, we've had clients in that prison before. So one has died there. Two other students have been killed in captivity. 3,700 people arrested. So, yeah, it looks like on the streets of Tehran and other cities in Iran that the protests have kind of been suppressed. That's not hard to do when you have a Iranian Revolutionary Guard who operates outside the rule of law, who will detain people indefinitely, sometimes execute them just because they took an opposing view from the governing authorities in Iran. These are still Iranians. They want a great country for Iran. They don't want to make it into the United States of America, but they do want to modernize. And we need to do everything we can to support those efforts, anything that's possible. Because what was coming from these protesters are the kind of chants that are in exact contrast to the chants that the Ayatollah and his the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and Hezbollah that they use. I mean, you go through in these chants, and I know we have sound from it, but instead of chants about death to America and death to Israel, the chants coming from these protesters, and by the way, this was a middle-class protest. I mean, how great is that? I mean, this is kind of like the American way in the sense that it was economic-based, not just freedom-based. But then, of course, the students who also were looking for the freedom, they joined together. So you're building a pretty good coalition of working class Iranians who maybe are more interested in their economics. And then the student community, who is probably coming from an okay economic background, but no longer wants to live under this repression, joining together. So it became a real threat to the regime that they've tried to put the halt to so quickly, because their slogans were not death to Israel and death to America. Their slogans were death to the dictator. Do you know who that is? The Ayatollah. Death to Rouhani. Do you know who that is? The president of Iran. Forget Palestine, i.e. stop wasting our millions of dollars on a cause that's so far away. We are Persians. You're talking about Arabs. Help us out economically. We are the ones hurting. Not Gaza, not Lebanon. My life for Iran. I will fight for my country. I will not fight for others' countries. These are significant changes in the Iranian thought process to take this kind of language into the streets. We need to do everything we can to support it. We're going to talk about it when we come back from the break here on Jay Sekulow Live.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
You know, folks, this is my first day back in the studio since we ended the year, and I want to take my opportunity as part of the ACLJ team to thank so many of you for your support at the end of the year for the American Center for Law and Justice. It was overwhelming. I know this has been discussed, I'm sure, by my dad and others here, but I wanted you to hear from me too, Jordan Sekulow as well, that we are so well prepared to enter what we are now in, the new year, and the new year brings new battles, both foreign and domestic. We're going to get into some of those domestic issues tomorrow. And, of course, now that Congress is back, a lot of issues will be coming up there. And can you believe it? We're getting closer and closer to midterm elections because we're in 2018 now. So another one of those election nights is not too far away. And depending on what states you live in, you may start seeing ads already or very soon. But we want to focus in on this issue with Iran and also something happening with North Korea, because when you talk about these kind of belligerent countries, I think we can follow both at the same time having these conversations. First, on Iran, what we have seen is we saw a massive protest and uprising in Mashhad, which is the second largest city in Iran, on December 28th last month. And in 5 days, there were reports spreading that dozens of cities nationwide, 20 to even 40 cities that included Tehran and the other major cities of Iran, that massive protest, the largest demonstration since, as we said, the 2009 Green Movement, which unfortunately was, to me, one of the biggest foreign policy failures of the Obama administration, because it required no weapons, it required no guns, it just required some backing. The people wrote their signs in 2009 in English. Their chants were in English. They were speaking to us and to our leaders for help. And the Obama administration instead was praising the restraint showed by the Ayatollah and Ahmadinejad and the security forces there. We had those horrible scenes of violence. I think the Iranians learned from that. So you're not seeing as many people getting shot at in the street. And in that revolution, you did. Instead, what you're seeing is mass detention. Now, mass detention in Iran is serious, because when you arrest, as the report is right now, this is the official Iranian report, so imagine how many people really are arrested. If you report that 3,700 organizers have been arrested, you could shut down a protest, even a nationwide one, if you arrest that many people. And by the way, in Iran, that's indefinite. And they're all being tortured right now, because they had the guts to take to the streets and say, not death to America, not death to an Israel, but let's play it. Let's play what they were shouting in the streets of Iran, because these people are brave. They are liberators. They are revolutionaries that that we need to be backing, however possible, to overthrow this dangerous regime. They don't want war with the world. They want to live in a country more like ours, which is what Iran was like before this Islamic revolution, which has failed its people. So you heard right there, and I'll go to Harry and Wes on this, for people, that was die Hezbollah. Now, a proud Iran who loved its supreme leader and its Iranian Revolutionary Guard and wanted to take over and create its own caliphate, if you will, they should love Hezbollah. They're on the front line. But what these Iranians who figured out economically are hurting is that when we made this nuclear deal with America, that's probably the worst foreign policy decision when it comes to Iran that the President Obama did. The second would be not doing anything about the Green Revolution, ignoring that. President Trump, by the way, has not been ignoring this protest. He's been supportive. So is Nikki Haley, doing everything they can, you know, but for obviously even increasing sanctions on the regime to even make it tougher for the regime to help and pay off basically people to keep quiet, you know, throw bread out into the streets, if you will. But let me go to Harry and Wes on this. The idea that the average Iranian has gotten past the point, probably because of technology and probably because of their high levels of education, that they're no longer buying into these chants of death to America and death to Israel, or they're not really concerned about Palestine, which seems very far away to most of them, or Lebanon, or Gaza. They are saying, stop funding this terror group, Hezbollah. Death? I mean, they're saying, die Hezbollah. Because Hezbollah got all that money that the U.S. sent over to Iran, not the people.
Absolutely. So if you look at the situation, Jordan, it's very possible that the Iranian mullahs are sending upwards of $100 billion, perhaps annually, to the military, to a foreign adventurism in Syria, in Lebanon, and Yemen, in support of Hezbollah, and as the leading state sponsor of terror. And they are also expending resources in developing missile technology in violation of UN resolutions. So this protest is very, very different from the 2009 Green Revolution. In the 2009 Green Revolution, it was largely middle to upper middle class Iranians, many of whom were college students. There was some disagreement with the authoritarian regime and with the government, but the protest today is very, very organic. It is grounded in the fact that for many Iranians, the Iranian mullah's adventurism has led to economic ruin and poverty, rising prices, scarce food availability. All of these things are driving the lower middle class into the streets, and they are willing to give their lives in favor of regime change. There's another difference that's very, very important, and that is the Trump administration, unlike the Obama administration, stands unapologetically with the Iranian people. And I think that makes a difference. And thirdly and lastly, I would add, the Iranian people are mastering underground technology, allowing them to continue to communicate, notwithstanding the fact that the Iranian government has attempted to shut down the internet. All of these things are fueling these protests, and I think they will continue.
Well, it's different also, Jordan, in that the 2009 protests were with the upper class, the educated, the students. This started with farmers and working class people, and yet has spread to the middle and upper class, some of the educated classes, and millions of Iranians. Iran is a huge country. Millions of them live in poverty. And so the protests started out about poverty and jobs and food prices, and yet spread to the corruption of the regime, because that regime, just their budget for this coming year, $26.8 billion goes to foreign security, translated terrorism. Another $27.5 billion goes to the Ayatollah and the Revolutionary Guard Corps. They are separate from the Artesh, the regular Iranian army. The Guard Corps reports directly to the Ayatollah. $27.5 billion there. So that's a total of $54 billion going to just those two things in the budget. Meanwhile, the budget for healthcare for the poor Iranian citizens is a mere $16 billion a year. The people have had it, and so they're calling not just for reforms. They're calling for the overthrow of the government.
I want to talk to you on air, folks. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We are taking your phone calls. We're live. And if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, share this with your friends and family. Click that share button now because people need to understand this issue. It gets into the news when people take to the streets. And then the repressive government puts the people behind bars. This is the time we need to be really most focused because we've got to encourage those folks, which means our government and other governments around the world who seek freedom and the downfall of this oppressive, evil regime need to be speaking out and saying, we've got your back. We know there will be loss of life if you take to the streets. You will have to be brave. It is your country to take back. But we will have your back to rebuild, to help, if you are able to basically, and I think we'd help push that, push the edge over if you need us to, for the fall of that regime if it got to that point. So share this with your friends and family and give us a call. I want your thoughts on this. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We've also got some interesting North Korea, South Korea news, which again kind of goes in line with when we're talking about Iran. You can't really ignore North Korea. Give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. Maybell on Facebook writes in, I stand with the people of Iran, not their leaders. Some reports are saying that there's protesting going on in at least 80 cities in Iran. Amanda on Facebook writes in that Hezbollah wouldn't be as powerful today if it weren't for the last administration. The Ayatollah went on a tweet storm. Well, yes, that is true. The Ayatollah regularly has gone on tweet storms, but remember, the Obama administration killed the investigation into Hezbollah's drug running. We talked extensively about that. Hezbollah was going to have real trouble when their networks were shut down by the U.S. government, except for the Obama administration wanted that Iran deal. We've got the FOIAs already filed. Filed those right at the end of the year. Last day of the year we could file in court. They wanted it shut down. We're going to take your phone calls. I know Dave's been holding on the line. Dave, we'll get to you first right out of this break. A couple lines are open. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on the air. That's 1-800-684-3110. We have a lot of experience, more than most of you, because we can't talk about all of it, in dealing with Iran, in dealing with the prisons, in dealing with the people, in dealing with the diplomacy, than probably any other outside group from the U.S. government in the world, because we've done it at the highest levels, some direct dialogue, indirect dialogue with the most powerful leaders of the world. So again, I think we have a lot to add to this with your help. Support the ACLJ at aclj.org.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Ooh, I bet the Ayatollah feels a little shaken right now, considering he had thousands of his own citizens take to the streets who he believes think he is some kind of almost deity, pope-like figure in the Shia religious faith, which the Sunni faith does not have in Islam, and his guardian council, and probably also his Revolutionary Guard, who makes a lot of money off of being his private military force in Iran. When people had the guts in Iran to take to the streets and shout death to him, not death to America. That's an easy one to shout in Iran. Not death to Israel. Easy. Death to the dictator. And the dictator is the Ayatollah. So he went on what we like to call a tweet storm about 7 hours ago. He writes this. I mean, so yes, Khamenei, the Ayatollah, is on Twitter. Twitter has kind of changed everything. He said, regarding the recent events, there have been various analysis. There's a correct point commonly made. That is separating people's honest and rightful demands from the violent and vandalizing moves by a certain group. These two must be separated. All moves against us by the enemy over the past 40 years are attacks on Islamic revolution. The revolution politically eradicated the enemy from Iran. Once again, the nation tells the U.S., Britain, and those who seek to overthrow the Islamic Republic of Iran that you failed and you will fail in the future too. First of all, if he thinks this is an attempt to overthrow Iran, he has no idea what we could do if we wanted to. I mean, if we really wanted to, just the United States could overthrow the Ayatollah in, I'd say, an hour and a half. Now, that wouldn't mean that there could be casualties. I'm just talking about in the most extreme sense, we could probably send in special forces and he could be with the right teams. And unless he's some underground bunker hidden away, but he makes a lot of public appearances, he may not survive very long. It's not so different than Iraq right now. They don't have the nuclear bomb. They do have missiles that could, of course, be shot into the region. But we've put up a lot of defenses. We'd have a lot of military there. So, again, he's doing this victory lap because, he put down a bunch of unarmed, poor, unfed citizens. And he's trying to say that some of them had the right demands. You know, maybe their economic demands were right. But those death to the dictator demands, nope, those are the people who are the enemies. And we've heard that so many times. That's the charge you use in Iran, legally in their court system, to put someone to death. Calling them an enemy of the republic, an enemy of the revolution, is the worst charge. That means you are equivalent to like a spy or a traitor, and it comes with the death sentence. Those are just a couple of his tweets. But he is trying to put this around to see the U.S. and Britain have failed. What he doesn't realize, guys, is that, one, I don't think the U.S. and Britain, I think we're probably caught off guard a little bit by the fact that after they did get this influx of cash, that the Iranians didn't do anything with it to help their people. You would think they'd take at least some of that money to boost the schools, boost the supermarkets, bring down the prices of bread. And of course, they have cheap oil and gas. And yet they spend it all on fighting for the Assad regime in Syria with the Houthis in Yemen, which so far have not come to a close, and rearming Hezbollah instead of helping their own citizens.
One of the clearest indications of how serious the threat is to the Iranian government today is the reaction of President Rouhani and the Ayatollah. They are now trying to really co-opt the revolution. They're saying, you know, they do have legitimate gripes. Yeah, we hear you. We understand. If the threat were not as real as it is, these leaders would never, ever be saying that to the people, saying that somehow another part of your protest is actually legitimate.
Yep.
And so I think they are feeling the threat. They are saying today that they have put down the demonstrations. In fact, there is so little news media coming out of Iran that they've shut down so much of it. The protests could very well be ongoing and not even diminished. And the outside world, at least for the moment, would not know it.
Yeah, I mean, these tweets from Khamenei, again, U.S. officials have started talking nonsense. When they start writing like this, I want you to tell you they are afraid. They are scared because they're trying to turn it into a U.S. versus Iran because they think domestically they still have got some victory points. I'm sure they do. There's probably still a sizable group in Iran. I'm not going to say this. Not everybody is perfect in Iran. They've got a sizable group who do very well economically and socially because of their connection to this regime, like the Revolutionary Guard and all of their families and extended out. So he said, the U.S. president says Iranian establishment, that's the people I was just talking about, are frightened by its own people, the citizens of Iran. No, the Iranian establishment was born by these people. Do you see how he's making these class distinctions right there? I mean, that's interesting that the Ayatollah is supposed to be a religious figure, is talking about how we have these, the most important Iranians, the establishment, born out of the poor and the working class, and that the poor relies on them. Why should it be scared of them? If it was not for these people, there would not be an establishment. Listen, these people went against a Shah who became overly oppressive. And I get that. There were concerns there. And I think what they got was much more than they bargained for. They thought, you know, this revolution was, it was kind of bloodless. And they thought, they did not realize that they were getting this hardline Islamic regime, which would force women into the burqa and back into the homes and off the beaches and basically isolate Iran from the world. And so since 1979, I think they've been trying to figure out, and then of course there were wars in between that slowed these progresses down. How do we get ourselves out of this mess that we created? Sometimes you do that. I mean, sometimes people come together against something bad and replace it with something that ends up worse because they were just hoping that they could get rid of the something bad. And what happens when you create those vacuums is sometimes if you don't have the right people ready to take charge, the bad people do. And that's what we saw in Iran. And it's taken now 30 plus years and a new generation of Iranians to say, you know, I've lived like this enough. Life's not worth living if it's going to be like this.
Absolutely. And so the mullahs consistently have overpromised and underdelivered with respect to the economic gains that the lower middle class would achieve under their leadership in comparison with the Shah. In addition, they overpromised and underdelivered benefits to the middle and lower classes with respect to the Iran nuclear deal, very much like President Obama overpromised and underdelivered with respect to the benefits that Americans would receive. At some point, the chickens have to come home to roost. People recognize that the benefits are simply illusory, and this leads to huge disappointment, and people begin to say to themselves, they have nothing left to lose, therefore that leads to an uprising.
Even right now, there's a new protest movement happening as we speak in Tehran in front of Evin prison, where protesters are chanting and protesting. There's a student who was killed in Evin prison, the official government report there. And we've had clients held in this horrible political prisoner that they torture them. This student who only lasted about 24 hours. We always talk about how long he lasts in this prison. They said he killed himself. First of all, let me tell you something about Evin prison. You don't have the resources to kill yourself or the ability to kill yourself. You only die when they choose for you to die. And mostly they want to torture you and get information out of you and hold you as long as possible. If you died, it's because either their torturing went too far or they wanted to send a message. No one killed themselves in that prison because they wouldn't have had an ability to. There's no way to do it. They wouldn't have had a shoestring. They wouldn't have had anything to bash their head into. I mean, that's how this prison is set up, to hold people long term. So that is happening. I know we've got a lot of calls. Let me just say to Dave, to Britt, to Edison and Lou, we are going to get to your calls. I just wanted to get all this information out in our first half hour of the broadcast. There's a lot more to talk about. When we come back, we're going to get into some North Korea, South Korea news as well. Keep calling. Got one line open, 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110, and continue to support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. You can donate online at aclj.org as we begin the work in this new year, 2018. We'll be right back in our second half hour of the broadcast.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
we're on the cusp of a different kind of movement in Iran. In Iran, where the working class have taken to the streets. Now, they've been suppressed, so some of those protests have died down because when you have 3,700-plus arrests and killings and people are starting to die in pretty big numbers. But these were bold statements. Death to the dictator. Death to the Ayatollah. Death to Rouhani. Death to the president. We don't care anymore about Palestine or Lebanon. We don't care about we forget Palestine, not Gaza, not Lebanon. My life is for Iran. We're just some of the chants. Death to Hezbollah, another chant. And this all started as an economic protest. So it was not the student intellectuals just seeking freedom and freedom of speech, which again are principles we think are most important. But by the working class, who are usually the base of the Ayatollah support, because they were so upset that when Iran got this nuclear deal with the U.S. and this influx of cash, not just the $1.7 billion it got in the plates of cash from the U.S. government, but all the money that was opened up to Iran to come back into the country that was frozen from various countries, and the new business Iran is able to do, that instead of reinvesting that into their own economy, they've used all of that money, as it seems, and as these folks who have taken to the streets believe, not to help their own people eat, not to better their lives, which, again, you'd think would be a good move by the regime. But see, this is a regime that is dead set on spreading through the region. They are not just satisfied with being in Iran as the Ayatollah. They want to be in Iraq. They want to control Syria. And they do that through Assad if he stays in power. They want to take Yemen. So they've got the Houthi rebels there at their funding. They want to take, they've taken most of Lebanon through Hezbollah. And of course, they want to take Israel through utilizing Hezbollah. And the people are saying the exact opposite. We wanted the money for to help us. And you sent the money for your own imperialistic goals. Interesting to use that terminology because they usually like to call that us imperialistic. But see, we don't go around taking over countries. That's exactly what they're trying to do. They see a moment where they've got the path to nuclear bomb. These other countries don't. So let's seize the moment, these Ayatollahs think, except for, our people are against what we're doing. Let's go right to the phone. Dave in New Hampshire has been holding on. Dave was on for at least a half hour. So let's send him a book. Just ask him which one he doesn't have or if he wants to and make sure we can send him a couple. Dave, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
I appreciate your station, your efforts for all these many years. I've been a member as well. And I think I'm very optimistically hopeful this time that we will not abandon these revolutionaries and that we will give them everything they need to be successful. Because the only way historically that any regime change occurs is from the inside, not from the outside. And this is probably could be the spark that'll set off the North Korean people and the Chinese again. Because remember Tiananmen Square, what happened there? We abandoned them, and they all got run over by tanks and killed and murdered in the street. And I'm hopeful at this time that they know and they get the message loud and clear that the free world is behind them. And as you were saying, that we will back them up and that they will be successful.
Yes, and our government has made that clear. I mean, Than, we've got a House resolution moving forward. We've got a president who's spoken out about it. That's what's upset the Ayatollah so much. So the U.S. government, unlike the Obama administration, see, elections have consequences. These people realized when they took to the streets in 2009, the administration, the U.S., ignored them. So did the Western world. This time around, they're not being ignored. I think that's why the Iranians, Than, clamped down on them so much quicker, is because they realize we're dealing with a different world and a president and a U.S. that could get behind these protesters and get them resources very quickly.
Yeah, Jordan, I agree with Dave. What these demonstrators need more than anything, the fuel that they need, is the eyes of the world and particularly the United States on them and standing with them. That's why President Trump's leadership was so strong. That's why Ambassador Haley going to the Security Council, even in the face of opposition, and say we stand with the Iranian people. That was so significant, Jordan. There are other things they can do, but that is the single most important one, and they have already taken that action.
All right, folks, so we come back. We'll take more of your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Some very interesting North Korean news. And ties with, of course, with Iran. Support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice, ACLJ.org.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation, the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
All right, folks, some very important news. So right now, I know that we're broadcasting on radio as well and all those stations. So keep listening. If you're on Facebook and Periscope, I want you right now, I'm going to give you a couple seconds here to share this with your friends and family, because many of the reports have been that this Iran protest has come to a close. And the mainstream media, because when they don't have the mass people in the streets every day to show, they kind of move on. Not that they're not discussing it some, but they kind of move on. We kind of are doing deep dive because this is an issue close to our hearts that we know a lot about, because we work specifically where some of these people are being held and the prisons they're being held with the attorneys that are trying to help them. We know them at the ACLJ. So we've got kind of a unique perspective and a unique expertise in dealing with this kind of Iran situation with protest and the arrest. So the Wall Street Journal, a reporter, I guess is in Iran for the Wall Street Journal or is working with someone there, has just posted on Twitter a photo of a protest happening right now. Now, if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, share this right now. Click share right now so your friends and family will see that the protests in Iran are actually on day 12, that they have not ended. Take a look at that image right now we've got up at Facebook and Periscope. And if you're on our radio broadcast, go back today and watch the show towards the end of the show. You could see this image all tweeted out as well. So go to twitter.com/JordanSekulow. This is day 12 of the Iranian protests, and those people are protesting in front of one of the scariest, deadliest prisons in Iran, the notorious Evin prison, where Saeed Abedini was held, where other political prisoners have been held, where a student has already lost his life, a student protester who was, they say, killed himself. No way. Can't happen in a prison like that. He was tortured, and probably overly tortured was the issue there, or executed, as Iran has no problem doing. So that is today. So the Ayatollah may claim that these protests are over, but in his home city of Tehran, right there, the people are still taking to the streets. And the chants from outside that prison are, be afraid, we are all together, innocent students must be freed. So the Ayatollah may have gone on a tweet storm, but it hasn't kept people from taking to the streets, guys.
Right. For 39 years almost, the Iranian people have lived under this oppressive, brutal religious regime. As bad as some of the corruption was in the latter years of the Shah's reign up until 1979, I think what this theocratic religious dictatorship has done makes some of the actions of the Shah's regime pale into insignificance. And so the people have had it. And what started out as something about economics and of mainly working class and farm people is now involving the middle class and the educated and students. I think this demonstration has the potential to really make a marked change in the country of Iran. I'm glad to hear what the people are saying in front of the demonstration of the prison today, because I was thinking about it this morning, and dictatorships do not usually last once the people no longer fear the dictator. And I think what you're seeing in Iran today are people who are risking their lives and their freedom to stand up for their own justice and their own freedom. And they are showing remarkable courage and fearlessness in the face of this brutal theocratic regime.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, I think that we've got a unique opportunity here. I want you to keep sharing this with your friends and family. More people need to understand that these protests in Iran, they may not be seeing on their television screens right now, are still going into day 12. And the House is taking action. So, Than, Congress is taking action on this. And I just want to keep reiterating, our president, unlike President Obama and his State Department, who are so weak and so dead set on getting a junky nuclear deal with Iran just so they'd have some foreign policy accomplishment, just stayed silent during the Green Revolution. We are not seeing that at all this time around from the United States. It has to be strategically done. I agree with those comments. Yep. You don't want to make it look like the U.S. is trying to take over your country. And that's not the case. We just want to empower Iranians to decide their own fate. They don't have that ability right now. They're being run by a ruthless dictator who has his own private military.
Well, and Jordan, it's really the Congress following the lead of President Trump, because the very first thing that they asked for in this resolution is for the administration to convene an emergency session of the United Nations Security Council. Well, guess what? The administration already did that. I think this is going to be overwhelmingly approved on a bipartisan basis this afternoon, Jordan, a very good step in solidarity. Well, let me just underscore the conversation you had with Wes as it directly relates to both the administration and Congress here. It is very encouraging that these demonstrations are still going on. But Jordan, you know this better than I do. The regime will eventually put this down unless the eyes of the world remain on it. They want to try to run out the clock on the rest of the world so that when we're no longer watching, when the United States is no longer paying attention, they will put it down. And let me just say, putting it down is a nice way of saying they will kill these demonstrators. So President Trump showing strong leadership, Congress on a bipartisan basis following his lead today, it is literally saving lives in Iran, and it is giving them a chance to continue demonstrating. If that stops, Jordan, this thing ends. The regime will kill these demonstrators.
We've got a few lines open for you, 1-800-684-3110. To that point exactly, Edison in California. We go right to that call on line 5. Edison, thank you for holding on. We're going to send you our book, Unholy Alliance, talks about Iran as well. So hold on after your comment, and we'll go right to you. Thanks for holding on.
All right.
You're on the air, Edison.
Hi. How you doing? God bless you all.
Doing
great job. I was born and raised in Iran. And the first revolution, I was there, and I saw what happened to Iranian people. And at the first, it was very good. And then as soon as they start going against the regime, they put all of them to Evin prison. I had many good friends at high school. Most of them I did not see. And the one that I saw after, and they were like acting crazy in their head. They didn't recognize nothing. Mm-hmm. And if the government doesn't help them, because I'm sure they're taking picture of all of them.
Right.
And if the government does not help them, they're going to go after every one of them.
Yep.
And
yeah,
make sure that they're going to be disappeared.
Edison, Iran is a police state. You know, it's run by a private military, only loyal to the Ayatollah, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And Edison, as you said, if he still got him on the line, the fact that if, I believe the reason why it's taken since 2009, almost 9 years, to get to a point where people are speaking up again is exactly because of what you said. The repression of that 2009 Green Revolution meant that many people disappeared, many people were killed, and it took almost a decade, Edison, to build back up enough people to take to the streets. So when you aren't successful in these efforts, there are serious consequences. These people are taking their lives and their families' lives into their own hands by taking to the streets of Iran, Edison, and shouting out death to the Ayatollah.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. But that's at the same time, for that 10 years that they are thinking, if anything like this happened again since 2009, how are they going to stop them and they're going to force them more? So Iranian people have no power unless somebody else to help them.
And so this, I think, goes to the importance of what do you do. And Lou's calling in about that. He's actually calling in from Israel. Lou, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. We appreciate you listening in from Israel. And I'll send you a book as well. We can get one to Israel if easy. We've got our office in Jerusalem. And thanks for holding on. Lou, you are on the air.
Hi, Jordan. Hey, Lou. Pleasure speaking to you. And we really appreciate what you and your dad do for the cause and for Israel.
Thank you so much.
I just wanted to know perspective about what Israelis are thinking, and specifically the Israeli government. I mean, it's no secret that Bibi Netanyahu has been the biggest proponent of sanctions against Iran, and he's been talking about it for years, and very few people listen to him. Obama certainly didn't listen to him. And he did the complete opposite, where he gave them billions in cash. And so right now what has to be done is the U.S. government has to tighten those sanctions,
right,
which I know President Trump is starting to do. But what's even more important is to get the EU and the other major countries like China and Russia to also sanction.
And we had mechanisms in place that were very easy. The world was okay with always coming forward and tightening sanctions on Iran, because even Russia, even China, they didn't love the idea of nuclear Iran. It wasn't great. It was kind of on their doorstep. They thought it was a threat to them, especially the Russians. The Chinese don't want anybody other kind of superpowers disrupting things. But then we opened up the markets, and they could financially benefit and then work together. And they have no issue working with Iran. And so this has become a boom economically for places like Iran, for Russia, China, and then also Western Europe, because of what the Obama administration did by undoing sanctions. So we've already seen attempts at the United Nations, guys, to put in new sanctions, and so far they have not gone through, just because of what the Obama administration did.
Absolutely. So in 2009, the Obama administration became an accomplice to Iranian oppression. We gave up sanctions, we gave up leverage, and we empowered the mullahs to further oppress their people. The current administration, the Trump administration, has reversed that policy, and I hope they take the next step, which is to decertify the Iran nuclear deal.
All right, folks, we got some phone lines open now. We're going to be talking about Iran. If you've got questions about what's happening there, as the protests are continuing, just tweeted that out, and we put that image up for our Facebook and Periscope audience, so you can see that there are protests, even right in front of a government-controlled prison, the most notorious Evin prison. But also talking North Korea, South Korea as well. There's some news there. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
right, 1-800-684-3110. We've got a lot of calls coming in, and we're going to get to those because that's what we do in this segment. But I do want to talk about this North Korea, South Korea news just briefly kind of for people because it's not getting as much attention, kind of like how the Iran thing died down. We tried to do that on this show. It's like tell you what is still going on and happening in the world that may only be getting a minute or less on cable news.
Right, and there is a direct connection, Jordan, between North Korea and Iran. They are big trading partners with one another. Both of them have increased their missile technology over the last few years, and that's because they share missile technology. One of the biggest threats to North Korea getting a nuclear-armed ICBM is not just that they would have it to threaten our allies in the region or threaten the continental United States, but that they would actually sell the missiles to Iran. Iran doesn't have to worry about developing the missiles once the JCPOA, you know, goes away. North Korea would sell it to them. But anyway, yesterday, for the first time in 2 years, the North and the South Korea's leadership met at the Peace Village near the DMZ to talk. Supposedly, you know, North Korea wanted to send athletes to the Olympic Games, which come up next month in Korea. And indeed, that's what they talked about. And that's what's going to happen. When the South Korean leader of their delegation tried to bring up the whole denuclearization of the peninsula, they were completely shut down by the North. This idea of them talking and of North Korea participating in the Olympic Games is a playbook that goes back to Kim Jong-un's father and grandfather. They've done it over and over. This is a PR move. It's a clever one. Now, the good news is because they're participating, you won't have to worry about an attack on South Korea.
And there was a lot of concern
about the Olympic Games. But the idea that the North and South Korean athletes will march out together in the parade of the Olympians is a huge PR move.
Oh, yeah, because it confuses the entire world.
We keep
talking about these two countries being on the brink of war, and then they're going to march out together as in a sporting competition.
And what will happen
the world's
because
greatest
of this,
sporting competition.
And I predict it today, is that some of the nations, including Russia and China, they will use what they're doing in this whole Olympic thing. After the Olympics are over, they will say, well, let's use enticement and aid to negotiate with North Korea. That has been done over and over since 1995. It does not work. In 2005, the last time we had serious multilateral negotiations with the North Koreans, in the middle of the talks, they detonated a nuclear bomb. They use talks and aid and the easing of restrictions to increase their weapons.
You know, so we're going to follow this very closely as the Winter Olympics approach next month. Let's go right to the phones. This is what we do in the phone call. I appreciate that update from West News. You're not probably getting in a lot of places, but again, very significant as you have North Korea and South Korea sitting down. What came of that is this Olympic move, which again, PR victory for Kim Jong-un. I mean, right there. I mean, just right off the bat. Let's go to Roland in Massachusetts on line one. Roland, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Jordan. Good to have you on line here.
Thanks, Roland.
My question is, with the House of Representatives voting to support the Iranians, after the House of Representatives votes for it, and they probably will approve it, will it go to the Senate for their approval also?
So on these resolutions, Dan, just explain to people, because they don't have the kind of effect as like legislation. Would the Senate likely do something similar?
They certainly could, Jordan. I think that they should. At this point, there are no plans for them to do so. I would encourage them to do it, but I would actually point the caller more specifically to what will happen on the sanction negotiations, because as you talked about, a lot of those international sanctions based on the deal, that's toothpaste that can't be put back in the tube. But new congressional sanctions could absolutely be passed. It wouldn't even technically take the U.S. all the way out of the deal. So I actually think that's the flashpoint in the Senate to watch the most closely. Can they come to a bipartisan agreement on a new regime of sanctions and send those to President Trump for him to sign into law?
All right, Ken calling in from Missouri on line three. Ken, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You are on the air.
Thank you very much. I have a specific question.
Yep.
Was there a specific defining moment that actually triggered all of this? Thank you.
Yeah, so I mean, specifically, you know, these protests started on December 28th. Started out just a few hundred people protesting, of course, what the real protests that usually lead to change, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but they usually are pretty successful. They lead to some kind of change. It started out with a few hundred people protesting the high cost of living and unemployment, but it quickly spread across the country using technology apps as an anti-regime movement. So it started as a working class protest and turned into a larger protest that spread to now we hear maybe up to 80 cities. in Iran, including its capital and all of the major cities. It is described as the biggest demonstration since the 2009 Green Movement. I think what this stems from is that Iran has had an influx of cash like they've never had before. The government has never had this kind of cash influx, billions before. And they didn't use it to help its people who are in poverty. They didn't use it to build better hospitals or schools and feed its people, bring down the prices of food, restock the shelves with the necessary items, make life easier for Iranians. They used it to arm Hezbollah. They used it to keep fighting in Syria. They used it to keep fighting in Yemen. They used it to keep up their imperialistic activities. And that's what the people are upset about. So they were shouting, death to the dictator. That means, of course, the Ayatollah. Death to Rouhani. That's the president of Iran, Mr. Moderate, he's supposed to be. And they even shouted this, forget Palestine. Another chant, not Gaza, not Lebanon. My life is for Iran. So, I mean, that's a stark contrast from what we think about the Muslim world, right? That they're obsessed with destroying Israel and America and taking back Jerusalem and all these issues. They're saying, we don't even care. This doesn't affect our lives. They also said the leader, Ayatollah, lives like God while the people live like beggars. And included, by the way, death to Hezbollah. We talked a lot about Hezbollah the last couple of weeks. Death to Hezbollah. These kind of statements, see, it starts with the economic. It goes in with the kind of general problems. But it all stems from, I think, that you've got now a uniting force of working class Iranians, the very poor, who have nothing to live for right now. It's so bad for them. They're mad that their regime got an influx of cash and did nothing for them. Plus the intellectual class who has no freedoms, who have also feel like they have nothing to live for, stuck inside of this country as a giant security prison state, where if you don't always fall in line with the government, by the way, even if you do, Ahmadinejad got arrested over the weekend because he said, well, some of the things people were protesting about were legitimate, like the economic. He's been in jail since December 28th, since the protests began. So even former presidents, radical presidents who were very aligned with the Ayatollah, are now in prison themselves. So there is a lot to talk about on all of this. We're not going to let this go. Guys, just around the table very quickly, what should the U.S. do right now?
I think that the world and the Iranian people, they watch what the U.S. does and says, whether or not it's really doing anything on the ground. So I think our opinions, the actions of Congress, the words of the president, that will be a big boost to their morale and to their own courage. Covertly, perhaps the CIA might at some level get involved. I don't know about that.
One thing that we can do, and we can do it immediately, and that is we can reinstitute sanctions against the Iranian regime. In the next 2 or 3 days, the president will have an opportunity to weigh in on the Iran nuclear deal, and I would certainly urge him to decertify.
Than 10 seconds. What can Washington do?
I would just say quickly, they should follow the lead of the demonstrators who say, die, die, Hezbollah, and reverse the standing down on Hezbollah of the last administration. Let's go after Hezbollah again and stand with the Iranian people.
I'll kind of finish with this. We started with the question, has the Ayatollah crushed the working class revolution in Iran? The answer for me, someone who spends a lot of time on this issue, is not yet, and we still have a chance to help. Not yet. I mean, I think that's the important. It could happen. But it has not yet happened. People are still taken to the streets in Iran. Pray for them as they fight for their freedom, and I hope our government does more for those people. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.